The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Second hour is live on a busy and nearly manic Monday after the NCAA tournament eliminates guards from 68 to 16. Big topic so far has been John Calipari and the future of Kentucky basketball. We talked about the must bust. A little bit later on, we'll talk about Tennessee. Of course, Alabama is also a subject, and we'll talk to Ryan Phillips coming up here at the bottom of the hour, who's written an extraordinary piece about what may have gone down the night that Brandon Miller found himself the subject of so much controversy, and tragically, lives were lost. We'll get into that in a few minutes. Right now, let's check in with Kay, who is in Arkansas. Hello, Kay.
Hey, those Razorbacks are hard to stop. We love your song. We love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, Paul, listen, everybody who's already got knocked out, all you from Kentucky and anybody else around the SEC, get on the must bus. Come on. Let's go to Vegas. And
you know what? I saw Mus after the game with no shirt on, and I've got to give it to him.
I'm telling you, Paul.
He inspired me to hit the gym.
He wasn't looking too bad to a 63-year-old lady.
Man, I tell you what.
You know what? You made me laugh out loud, as young people say. When a couple weeks ago I saw you and you had your glasses off and you had on your big white thick headband.
That was
a good one.
Thank you. Yeah, Ron Slay gave me that in Nashville. I haven't had a headband on since high school, so it was quite a retro move.
Funny. You do make me laugh, and you make me laugh when you're doing the shows with Tebow and then before the football games. You're always the best.
Well, thank you.
But let me ask you a question about Nick Smith, our player who my husband keeps. I'm just a retired drama teacher, so I'm not an athletic guru of any kind. But my husband keeps saying, he's going to go in the first round. He'll be a one and done. We can't even, you know, coming back from being sick, and it's just like he's not gelling with the routine, and we need him for the this.
No,
coming
I agree.
Up
I agree.
Game.
He's been MIA. By the way, quick question: what in terms of drama teaching? What was that? High school?
High school here in Little Rock, Arkansas, for 20 years, and love musical theater, and love the students, and I'm really empathetic a lot of times with the coaches and how they have to motivate a group of guys.
Kay, about 30 years ago, I got talked into doing a play for the first time in my life. And I will tell you this, and I hope nobody else is listening. I thought I was so good in the play that I would have Hollywood offers. And I can assure you, not only have I not heard from Hollywood, I never heard from another theater director anywhere. I thought I was just I was going to be the next Broadway star, but it didn't happen.
Okay, what play did you do? What play?
It was an old play called The Detective Story. And what happened was the director of the community theater had me play a reporter. He actually had the real police chief in the city and play the policeman, the police chief, and he got various people to replicate similar roles. And the director was, I think, released from his job about 6 months later, so it didn't go over well.
Look at you. You gained confidence, and you got up there in front of people. You got rid of the butterflies in your stomach, and it gave you confidence to go on and do something like you're doing now. Look at that.
Kay, the funniest thing was, and you'll relate to, I mean, for several weeks, I would go up to Chick-fil-A and order like I was in a Shakespearean play. I mean, my hands would move, my voice would, the diction would be perfect, and that went away quickly, too.
Well, bless your heart. You're doing all right now,
okay.
I'll tell you that.
But it was a – thank you, Kay. It was a great experience, though, and obviously a one-and-done, to use the basketball vernacular. Cheerleader is up next.
Hey, man, thanks for taking my call. And on Twitter, changing all of the subjects, maybe it was last week that I saw it. You asked who is your favorite, Patrick, remember?
Right. I sure do.
Well, my favorite Patrick is Patrick Swayze.
Well, you picked a pretty good one. Patrick Swayze, what was that song he sung in that movie?
Dirty Dancing. I'm telling you, that was the dancing, wasn't it?
Right.
That was some dancing. And
the time of my life. Yeah, I mean, didn't he just die, Patrick Swayze?
It was several years ago, early. He whatever he
couple
got,
years ago.
I don't know. But all the basketballs have been so much fun, and the arenas have been fun to watch. And I saw, so far, two balls stick up there on the rim. Have you seen more than two?
That happens every once in a while. It's a weird situation. But Cheerleader, thank you very much. I'm glad you're still remembering Patrick Swayze after all these years. Let's continue with more phone calls. Eric is in Tennessee. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Very well.
Let's talk about the balls. What do you think about them?
I think Tennessee is a legitimate threat to get out of that region. I mean, they've had a little bit of good fortune with some of the other upsets. But nobody has had a better game than they did against Duke.
Well, the NCAA tournament's a tough time to be breaking in a new point guard.
Right, it
and,
is.
You know, it looks like they're getting a little bit better with it every game. So,
and that had to be a big concern. Well. I mean, I was California worried after the Louisiana game. That looked very familiar. And then Saturday afternoon, they just let loose.
Yes, they did. I tell you what, I think that Duke team is going to be a really great team next year. Those guys get another year in the weight room and another year on the court. They're going to be hard to deal with. But, you know, I was proud of Rick Barnes. I was certainly expecting to be gone by this weekend, the usual Tennessee first weekend exit. But what about those balls, baby? We laid on
them.
No,
and again, I realize FAU has been a shocking team, but I'll take that one over what that game could have been.
Well, and that's me. I'm watching Kentucky play Kansas State last night, knowing that if Tennessee wins the next game, they're going to play the winner of that game, probably.
Right.
And I'm saying to myself, Kansas State has not got their team that can play for Kentucky.
Yeah,
talent-wise.
You're right.
I mean, I think by far talent, Kentucky was far better talent than Kansas State was.
Well, Kentucky is usually more talented in every game they're in.
Well, they don't get out-talented much, that's for sure. And that's one thing Calipari does. He brings a bunch of really great basketball players. But for whatever reason, I mean, why does Rick Barnes fall out of the NCAA tournament historically early? I don't know. Why is Calipari not a great March coach either? I don't know. But they're going to get good teams on the floor. And I'm, as a Tennessee fan,
but I will
I
say this
Calipari
about Rick Barnes. I think what he's I remember sitting in Nashville 2 weeks ago, and when they lost on the Friday afternoon, everyone was saying, here we go again. But he's put all that to bed. Now, again, this is a Tennessee basketball team. 6 weeks ago, I thought, you know, Final Four was an expected, a real possibility. And it is again. Hey, thank you for the call. Do appreciate it. We head to the break. We'll get into the Brandon Miller situation, what really happened on the early morning of January 15th, a little bit later on, with a very special guest, Ryan Phillips. More of your phone calls right after this.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Softball after us in quite a game. Arkansas taking on Alabama. Back to your calls, and let's continue here. Dennis is up next. Hey, Dennis, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, how are you? Longtime listener, and love your show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, I've been a Kentucky fan for decades. I started as a kid listening to Kay with Leopard on the radio with my dad. Long before ESPN, so
sure.
Got a long history of being a bleeding blue. And since signing his lifetime contract, Cal's record, especially against top teams, has been abysmal. And can't help but talk about Cal's consistent foot and mouth disease that he has. And what started at the beginning of the year in the Bahamas with him talking about Alabama and Georgia's football programs and Kentucky being a basketball program.
Right.
And so when Alabama wins the Hoops title this year, which it looks like it's on target to do, Cal will be eating a lot of crow. And if Bill Self had Cal's recruits, Kansas would have 3 or 4 more titles in the last 11 years, not one. And like you said all afternoon, we get top recruiting classes, then it's wait till next year's top recruiting class. And for me, the bottom line is that other coaches prepare for Kentucky better than Cal preps for them. That's my take.
Dennis, I buy the we have a number one recruiting class coming in once or twice, but – that is really, I mean, if you eliminate the line, we have a number one recruiting class coming in for Kentucky, what else is there to feel good about right now?
Absolutely nothing.
I think he's got a problem. I really do. And I've been a staunch defender of him because he brings everything that you want in a program. I mean, Kentucky basketball has always been at the epicenter, but it's starting to become – irrelevant's a strong word, but in terms of what matters, when you look at the NCAA bracket, I mean, I knew some people that looked at that game yesterday and go, I'm not trusting Cal in a big-time Sunday afternoon matchup, even against a school that was higher seeded, which is deceiving. Kentucky was, I think Kentucky went off a slight favorite in Vegas in the game. Tony is in Kentucky. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Mr. Feinbaum, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Feinbaum, sir, thank you for receiving my call. I'm a casual listener. I listen to you a little bit more than I used to because of my situation. I have an opportunity to.
Thank you.
I have much respect to you and for you and most all your opinions. I'd like to UK first, always UK first. And I know UK's underachieved. That may be saying it lightly, and we're very down. I hope Oscar's greatness in rebounding does not get overshadowed by our shortcomings. I hope Louisville does a little bit better, gets a little bit better in the years to come. I mean that. But UK first, always. Some people hate one and love the other. I never understood it. And I wish a good luck, damn it, to Alabama, Arkansas, and Tennessee. Sincerely. Hope they do well. And everybody down here is not hating on everything, although it's bad and he needs to change or fix or whatever. But, hell, I don't know much about that, how to coach somebody, so I don't feel like I got much of a right to get on him other than he's paid a lot and had some great talent, and maybe there should be more reward to show forth than that. But I don't know. And I'd like to also say very good luck to Coach Pitino. Very, very good luck. And Coach Pitino, this Kentucky fan loves you, respects you, and feel like a whole lot of gratitude towards you. Ms. Feinbaum, first time I've ever called any show. Thank you, sir, for taking the call.
Tony, thank you. You made a great first call. Rookie of the year. Royce is up next in Kentucky. Hello, Royce.
Yeah, you know, this is old size, Mr. Feinbaum. How you doing?
We are doing well. Thank you for calling.
You know, we talked a long time ago when I used to live in Florida.
That's right. Now, I do remember that.
Yes, Mr. Tony. I was the right person to come behind Mr. Tony from Kentucky because I had a big list of stuff to talk about, but you guys have already hit on all the narratives, so I had to line off a lot of my notes I had. But here's what I will say to the Kentucky fans. Real quick, Paul Feinbaum, thank you for taking my call. It really is time to stop calling him a great coach. And I'll go real quickly here. Because I told you years ago that those top 10 players were going to stop coming to Kentucky. And they did. They just now started coming back. 3 or 4 years later, they started to get them back again. Number one, I would have never let that Noel kid come across that half-court line and not put Toppin and Wallace right up in him. I mean, he would not get across that line. I would force them to start their offense half-court, taking up half that clock. I would not let him penetrate the paint to kick it out to the shooters. One of the things, if you go back and look at all those tier one teams that beat Kentucky this year, here's how they beat Kentucky. Pick and roll, high ball screens, backdoor cuts. All those tier one teams beat Kentucky the same way, running the same play. Calipari did not adjust. The only thing he adjusted was to have Shewe drop back down under the basket and cut off those lanes. He did that halfway through the season. So Shewe wasn't getting beat on those high pick and rolls anymore. And here's another thing. Rick Pitino used to press right at half court. You don't get to cross the line with Rick Pitino. Kentucky is up 20, 30 points on you, and we're knocking threes down like it's crazy. Calipari coached afraid the whole year. We get up 7 to 8, 10 points, and what does he do? If you watch Wallace and those guys bring the ball up, they turn and look back at Calipari. Calipari telling them to slow the ball. These kids want to run. It's called run and gun. They're young. They're talented. We had Kansas State back on their heels, and every time we got up 7 to 8 points, Calipari would slow the game down to what I call snail ball. And what I want to say lastly to the Kentucky players, you wonder why we get upset and get angry because Kentucky used to be the winningest men's college basketball program in history. They're not. They're number two now. They're number two, and they can never get ahead as long as Calipari is there. Stop getting on Facebook and stop getting on these social medias and requesting that these young men come back. It's hard on them to keep coming back only to lose because Calipari refused to go to a zone when the three ball is not dropping and them guards are not standing in front of the other team's guards. He refused to go zone. As long as they're making their shots, Calipari can win the game because that's elementary. But as soon as the shots stop falling, he has no clue on how to free up his shooters. CJ and Reeves are a lot better shooters than what these Big Blue Nation players, Big Blue Nation saw this year. They're a lot better shooters than that. Cal just don't have the formula. His voice is stale. The players don't hear him anymore. It's time to go. Too bad Rick Pitino went to St. John's because that's who they should have brought back. Thank you very much, Pat.
Royce, thank you. Really good to hear from you.
Talk to you again later.
Always a pleasure. Paul in Las Vegas. Hey, Paul.
Yeah. How you doing, buddy?
Paul, we're doing great. Thank you for calling.
You know what? All these people talk about Calipari, and it's amazing that if you never walked a mile in his shoe for you to have all those opinions about Coach Calipari. He's one of the greatest coaches of all time. And you know how hard it is to coach all those All-Americans and one and done and try to get them to play your way, play the right way, starting in November all the way through March? It's tough. And most of his teams, if you watch his teams, they turn the corner around Christmas, after Christmas, January, February. But it's funny how they all Cal never missed a shot. He still hadn't missed a shot. All he can do is coach. And he's doing the best he can to coach. He's done a great job. My own son went there, P.J. Washington. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of Kentucky. And you can't win it all. There's only one team that's going to walk away cut the nets every year. And you can't act like Cal don't want to win. He definitely wants to win. But try to get those players to play in the right direction and move in a one way. And you got everybody else, from parents to agents to all. Michigan State don't have those problems. They don't have those problems. They don't have five or six guys going to the league every year. They don't have those problems. He don't have all the distractions. So Cal deals with the distractions. He talks about taking the kids' phones. He does all that stuff to try. He has to do all this off the court to try to manage on the court. That's a tough job. So I think he's doing a great job. I think he's doing a wonderful job, and I'm proud.
Paul,
to
first of all, your son was and is a phenomenal player. I appreciate you sharing that. Let me ask you though, as being the son of one of those type of players that you were describing. I'm sure you understand some of the criticism, but do you, as somebody that knows basketball, is there anything that Cal can do about this, considering what he deals with every year and what he's facing? Because other programs seemingly are getting ahead of him.
You know what? It's a gift and a curse, right? We're not going to argue that. So you can't whine about the other end. But at the end of the day, it is an opportunity that we have to do better at from a university standpoint of trying to set the tone and it's going to look like, here's the people's going to, here's all the different runners, the agents, they're telling them shoot, shoot, shoot. No one's going to average 30 points. Cal don't have kids averaging 30 points. That's not the program that he has. It's a team ball, you know? So it's crazy how everybody wants to come here and be a hell of a scorer. But in the actual NBA, how many people leave Kentucky, or from college for that matter, and go into the NBA and score 30 points right away? It's rare. It's rare. But that's all these parents and all these people want to do. They think scoring is the key. And with my son, we made sure to play the total basketball. He can defend. He's a total basketball player. And he learned a lot of that with Cal, and that's what makes him successful, I feel, coming right into the NBA and playing right away. And people don't give Cal credit for that. Look at all the players in the NBA that he has right now and doing well.
Well said. Paul, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. You be well. I mean, obviously, his son he's still a great player right now in the NBA, but made a big impact in his short time at Kentucky. We'll change gears now, talk about the situation, the story that has been dominating our airwaves for nearly 2 months, off and on, especially in the last 5 weeks, the situation that happened back in January with Brandon Miller. And we'll talk to a man who has put a lot of the pieces together. The second time he has joined us on the program, Ryan Phillips joins us from Tuscaloosa right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
So as the bright lights of the national spotlight continue to burn on Brandon Miller and what happened back in January, new information coming out over the weekend from Ryan Phillips. We had Ryan on some time ago to discuss the media coverage of this event, and the editor of the Tuscaloosa Patch joins us. Ryan, first of all, thank you very, very much for making time. I know a lot of people around college basketball world are talking about your story the other day.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on again.
Well, Ryan, for those who have not read it, and I realize it's a long piece and it's very detailed. I don't intend to ask you to go through it chapter and verse, but what stands out to you that you have learned now that could change at least the perception of this case and maybe better understand, make all of us better understanding of what happened that night?
Well, if you go all the way back to the very beginning of this, I think the biggest thing that stands out is that it's we're at a completely different place with this narrative now. I think with that, the initial story when Darius and Michael Davis were both arrested, that the entire media sphere blew up. You were there. You remember it. And all of these different sub-narratives in this story kind of started taking on a life of their own. But for me, I can only speak for me. I can't speak for any other reporting or colleagues. But something honestly didn't feel right from the very beginning. And not to blame the investigators at all. They can only release what they can release at that point in the investigation. But there were just so many questions. And then once the rumor mill kind of started, you know, at the ground level in town, everything went wild with it. So I really did try to take a measured approach with how the story would develop. And eventually knowing that the truth would come out in the wash at trial, which it has a tendency to do. So in doing that, really kind of worked sources, developed a lot of great relationships, founded on trust, those basic, ethical principles. But finally getting to see the videos that I saw, and it's extensive. It's not, I didn't watch 30 seconds on an iPhone. It was a very, very extensive look at, multiple different security angles, things like that. But then, I think something that gets missed in this is that full court transcript. A lot of people didn't realize, we had the preliminary hearing in February that recording devices, phones weren't allowed in. It lasted nearly 3 hours. I like to consider myself a serviceable reporter, but I mean that, and I've been working in this business for a long time. 3 hours is a long time to just work with your eyes, ears, and notebook. So it's easy to miss things. But getting that full transcript finally to then overlay with the extensive start-to-finish video evidence that I saw, I mean, to me, it really painted a completely different story.
So Ryan, having had a chance to see all this, which we haven't, obviously, what stood out to you that has caused so many of your followers to not so much look at this differently, but start to wonder how the narrative got so far off track?
Well, I think it starts and stops with Brandon Miller. I talked about this the last time I was on the show, that when I first got the intel from multiple different sources around town, that his name would end up coming out in this case, that goes back to that sum of all fears reference. And I was like, this story is going to go from a regional, statewide type story, with Darius Miles, to being a full-on national story. So I think that really, with what we know now, I think a lot of the narrative has shifted around any kind of involvement by Brandon with that, or Jaden for that matter, any of the other players not charged. That, and then the interactions they had with this group that ultimately came to a head with the shooting. It really is, more things keep coming out, and we can talk about that at length, but I just posted a picture on my Twitter of the driver of that vehicle, the guy who shot Michael Davis twice during this shooting. That he can't be found. They can't find him to serve a subpoena to get him to testify. During the preliminary hearing, he wasn't even called because they couldn't find him to serve him. And there were pictures on their social media, on Jamia's social media, that have been since scrubbed, that nobody can find. But I had one sent to me today that is a picture of both of them that's since been taken off of social media, that Cedric can be seen, and their clothes correspond with what they were wearing that morning. He can be seen holding a big wad of money, but then in his right pocket, there is visibly something sticking out that could be a phone, but it could be the handle of a revolver that we know was used in that shooting. So it really is, the longer we've gone through this, I just think the narrative is just starting to trend more towards where the facts are, as opposed to the speculation that kind of front-ended all this.
And Ryan, I don't want to be disrespectful to the case, because I think we all agree the seriousness of it and the absolute tragedy of it. But I will ask you, because of time constraints, if we could chisel this down to Brandon Miller per se, because that's where so much of the confusion lie and continues to. Is there a simple way to try to characterize, based on what you know, based on what you've seen, based on the people with whom you have spoken, what is there that helps to support your theory, or the theory of those that you've spoken, that his involvement in this is more limited than maybe all the things that you talked about in your column a couple weeks ago, the national narrative that he was carrying a murder weapon to the scene knowingly?
I'll use as much in the way of facts and evidence with this as I can, and try as little to speculate. Because, some of the biggest evidence they had against Darius the morning of that, because a lot of people won't realize they were charged with capital murder within 24 hours, less than 24 hours of this shooting.
Okay.
And I think that a central part of that evidence was the text message from Darius to Brandon, asking for his gun. Nothing has been entered into the record that Brandon ever even saw that message. And it could be that's being sealed or hasn't been uncovered yet. Who knows? But one would think, with experience covering these kinds of cases, if they were able to get Darius on that charge and there was any kind of response from Brandon, being like, okay, yeah, I'm bringing it, then it would seem just as likely that he would be charged too. And you got to remember, the guy's the most famous player in college basketball right now. My only speculation would be that maybe he wasn't looking at his phone. But like I said, I'll leave the speculation at that. But, they did a search warrant of his car. They took the dash cam from it. That was where the conversation was recorded between supposedly Darius and Michael Davis, saying that the gun was in the vehicle. But with all that evidence that they gathered on Brandon, they didn't bring any charges against him. He cooperated with the investigation. I think that the investigators probably feel pretty good about that. So the public probably can too.
Ryan, as an aside, and I realize this story didn't get a lot of play the other day, but can you, and I may be going back into the media interpretation here, but the Billy Witts piece in the New York Times, which talked about the headline, a fourth Alabama player on the scene, which was wildly refuted by literally everyone. If I could ask you to opine here as opposed to report, do you have any earthly idea what's up with that? And could the New York Times have possibly been so wrong?
Like I said, I really don't want to get into, any of the work of my colleagues, but I will say that there's definitely something to it, because in the preliminary, the investigator who was on the stand when he was kind of going through all of the details right there at the shooting did mention that there was another person, or he was asked about another person in the car, potentially in the front seat. And I think he said something to the effect of, yeah, I just can't remember his name. So there's something to it. Somebody was there. But, I figure if we've already entered Brandon Miller's name into the conversation, I don't see why any other player would, be covered up for that. I don't see what they'd stand to lose. So it could be that it's not a public figure. Could be everything from a case of mistaken identity.
You don't believe it. You don't believe it. Do you, or don't you believe the story was correct, that a fourth Alabama player was there?
Well, I've talked to a player, not the individual that was named in the story.
Well, no, that's what I'm talking about, though, the walk-on.
Okay. I've talked extensively with Stephen New. He's the attorney for the Spears family right now, and he is absolutely adamant.
Okay.
Which that's what you want your attorney to be. I understand that. But for there to be so much immediate backlash, it wasn't like the university and the Spears family sat on this one for a while. Like, it was, like you said, it was immediate. But again, with all the other context that we have around it, I don't really think that it was a player, something could come out that would say it is. And I think I have a fairly, you know, informed idea of who it was without putting all my cards.
Okay, Ryan, before you go, and I deeply appreciate you coming on. And again, I know I'm veering back and forth between the lines here. You're a reporter on this story, but you've also offered opinions in your column. So much has been said, as you pointed out in your previous piece in late February. You called out Clay Travis. You mentioned other people. Knowing now what you know, having done all this reporting, do you have a final thought on the seemingly rush to judgment by not everyone but some in the national media?
Like I said, I'm not going to speak to specifics, but I will say that that's.
I just want your opinion, Ryan. That's all.
Absolutely, yeah. Just rush to judgment on it. That's spot on, and that goes from everything to the one of the best examples of all of this that has just shows the tidal shift in the facts as we know them and the place of the narrative now was like there was a story done where the mother of Jamia Harris was interviewed and very early on. I want to say this like a day or two after the shooting.
Yeah, I think that was AL.com.
Yeah, and I just remember the headline on it that Darius Miles, according to mother, had fired the shot that killed Jamia Harris because she had turned down his advances. We now know that's not true. But in looking back on that, there was a moment right after it where I was like scrolling on my phone, you know, which, again, that's fine. If the mother said that, that is, you know, that's just reporting. You're following up with sources. But as I was scrolling on Facebook like a day or two after that, I came across a YouTube video that was starting to get major traction from some big influencer. And it did. It had massive traffic on it, basically saying the same thing without qualifying it with, oh, well, this was according to the mother, you know. And I just remember being stunned that I was like, the narrative has spun in a direction that I could have never expected. And I'm really glad to see that, you know, like the information I reported the other day has been so well received, because I was worried that it would immediately be, you know, this is victim blaming or this is, because it's not. We're talking about a basic walkthrough of the events, and we can see it now. It's all going to be shown in court. I think that's the biggest thing that I would ask for folks to be patient with, is all of this will come out in court. Which I say that to say that, you know, other evidence could come out in court, as with any other case. You know, the prosecution could dig something up that refutes everything that I've just said. Like, that's the nature of these kind of things. But in seeing what we saw, and again, having that transcript to lay over it, it just really changed the narrative for me.
Ryan Phillips, many, many thanks for coming back on with an update from his previous conversation here in late February. We'll leave it there. We'll take a short break. Back with much, much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Razorback fans, don't go anywhere. John Daly will be joining us in a little over 40 minutes to talk about the Razorbacks winning and going to the Sweet 16. We'll talk to Daly in a couple of minutes. So let's check in with Matt right now in San Antonio.
Oh, brother, who's the next victim here? Can you tell me?
Tell you what? What's that?
Who's my next victim that can beat like a Cherokee drum?
We'll get to the. Yeah, we will reveal the pairings tomorrow. So you're facing Jim in the first round. I guess you know that.
Oh, that poor baby Jim will try on that comb his nurse, try on his pillow, get his diaper changed 4 different times. He's a loser. He's a fatty. I ain't afraid of Jim. Jim ain't man enough to take me on. I'm glad he's not calling this show. I'm just waiting for my next victim here. I'm the freaking boogeyman, Paul, and this little phone feud between me and Jim and the next guy.
Yeah,
and
could,
I have one question to ask you.
You'll probably be up against Chaplin Mac if you win. What was the question, Matt?
How do you think of A&M's basketball team? Yeah, we played like crap, but I'm proud of the way they did this year. We haven't been back in 5 years, Paul. What's your thoughts on that?
It was a bad ending. There's no getting around that. Matt, we're out of time for this hour. Coach Yo will join us the next hour, as well as John Daly. A busy hour coming up. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.